Now, say now. You're tuned into the Wake Up and Win podcast, and I am your host, Devon Pouncey. We are here at the Momentum Studios. Myself, Spencer Shea, will be here any moment. He is dealing with the wet, rainy Portland, Oregon traffic right now as he makes his way over here. But we're going to kick things off with Win Shares, as I am obviously here to get things started with you all. Big weekend for the Rip City Remix. The Rip City Remix will be playing their final two regular season games this Friday and Saturday night, 6 p.m. tip-off Friday, 3 p.m. tip-off on Saturday, and we need you all to be there. It is big playoff implications on the line this weekend. The Remix are currently in a five-way tie for sixth place in the Western Conference. And let me tell you, it's only six teams that make it into the postseason from each conference at the NBA G League level. And in the case of the Rip City Remix, they are currently right on the bubble, a chance to win a pair of games here this weekend at home, close the regular season out strong, and maybe even potentially move up a couple of slots because it's only a one-game difference from slots 3 to 6, where it's that five-way tie. So much on the line this weekend in the NBA G League. I will be scoreboard watching all weekend long, obviously, because a part of that I have to do for my job as the analyst to kind of know what's going on in the standings as we continue to update folks on the broadcast throughout the weekend here in these pair of games. And I'm so excited to be a part of, you know, this first inaugural season for the Rip City Remix. I'm glad that it happened. I love the way things have gone, and this team has really been great. The community has really showed up and showed out for the Remix as well. It's fan appreciation night, so you can get discounted tickets for the games. And again, big implications on the line, and I'm sure the fellas would love to have Rip City out in full support to try to help them make that push over the playoff line and into the postseason in their inaugural year. Also, we got DJ gigs. We're recording right now on a Thursday. I got a gig tonight at Mimosa at 6:30 p.m. Also, tomorrow night, I'll be at Silk Road, 10 p.m. It is a new bar in the Pearl District. That's Friday night, the 29th, 10 p.m. to 1:30 a.m. Catch me there. Just playing some real smooth vibes, smooth grooving, allowing folks to be able to sit in. It's actually more of a restaurant feel here, so it's really for folks to be able to just dine and have a good vibe going as they eat some wonderful food. Silk Road PDX, Portland's newest bar / restaurant over in the Pearl District. And then Saturday night, I'm on the rooftop on the 30th, Export Rooftop Bar and Lounge on the 16th floor of the Porter Hotel. Make your way on up. Always a good time on the rooftop. A beautiful scenic vibe up there, a good view of the city, beautiful skyline, great lighting inside. It's just a really cool spot to be. And of course, me on the ones and twos, I promise you, I will not disappoint. Well, Spencer made it in.
What's up, bro?
What up, fella? How you feeling?
Man, I'm good, dude. Traffic out here is a blitzkrieg, bro. The weather has been nasty.
Yeah.
My beard is scraggly, but I'm feeling all right.
Feeling all right.
Yes,
feeling
sir.
All right. I'm happy to hear that as we got Spencer in here to rock with us. And obviously, I was just talking about the Rip City Remix, you know, and what it is that we're trying to do here in the G League in our inaugural season, making this playoff push this weekend.
Yeah.
But on other NBA G League news, the NBA G League Ignite, this will be their final season as a team in the G League. I think a lot of good has come from the Ignite. Obviously, you know, guys are the likes of Jalen Green, Jonathan Kuminga. We got Scoot Henderson here in Rip City right now. There has been some good that has come from the Ignite, but the Ignite has extremely struggled in the NBA League, in the NBA G League from a competition standpoint. They're the worst team in the G League. And the Ignite was sort of put into play to be able to allow an alternative option for players that did not want to pursue college, especially because they weren't getting paid and were taking alternative routes. We saw people going overseas. We saw players doing internships. Then we saw the G League Ignite come about. So guys like Scoot Henderson, like Jalen Green, like Kuminga could skip out on college and start getting paid as they played in the Development League, which is the G League, prior to being drafted and playing in the NBA. And in a lot of the reports out there, the reasoning for canceling the Ignite is because the NCAA level has NIL now. They have the NIL option, and they've also adjusted the transfer portal. So, Spencer, I'm going to pass it to you right on the spot as you enter in. You hear this news about the Ignite. You've obviously gotten to see the Ignite this year as well, so you kind of know from a competition standpoint what it has been. What was your reaction when you heard this news?
I mean, I wasn't necessarily surprised when I heard Adam Silver trying to cut the G League out. I mean, he's...
The G League Ignite.
The Ignite.
I got to say Ignite, that. Yeah. I have to say
right,
that.
Right, right. It's an easy slip up to make.
It's an easy slip up to make. And I have had people reach out to me
and think
they're canceling the G League. And I'm like, no. The they're just canceling the G League Ignite.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I have legitimately had people like wishing me well, thinking that like, oh, the G League is coming to an end, which in turn means I lose a job. Oh, I have had those messages come through 100%.
It probably, you see that early in the morning, that can catch you off guard. Like, wait a minute, am I fired? Oh, what happened? What happened?
Yeah, they thought they were going away with the whole G League, but no, it's the G League Ignite.
No, see, right. And so the G League, it definitely needs a little bit more education because, you know, Phoenix Suns were the last team to hold out to have an affiliate. So once they got that, it was pretty much writing was on the wall. It's not needed.
Yeah.
These teams are for the development of the underclassmen, if you will, in these professional organizations.
The underbelly in a lot of ways.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
From the draft prospects and the guys that they work out coming up off of 2 ways and 10 days, it's a lot of movement. And so it's really like a vital artery for the teams. And so when every team has one, the NBA doesn't need to fill that void. And again, they can't compete anyway.
Yeah.
Anymore.
They've struggled.
You know?
They have struggled.
From a financial standpoint.
Even with the great prospects that they've had come through, it's still a team game. And they've struggled.
Yeah. From many angles. Yeah. And so it's, you know, I'm not surprised about it, man. I mean, Adam Silver, he's got bigger fish to fry. You know what I mean? He's got bigger fish to fry. And I think that where his head is at is like, and we've talked about this, that he wants to try to bolster up the American product of basketball at that level.
For sure.
And the G League Ignite is just a piece in the way for what really the landscape is out there and has to offer, especially now with the advent of NIL, where guys can go and develop, particularly in the NCAA.
Yeah. No, I think it's big. And, you know, kind of piggybacking off of that, you consider, just think about the narratives right now surrounding the NCAA tournament. And what it is that you've been hearing. You've been hearing a lot more about the women's tournament more than ever this year. You've been hearing about the star power in the women's game at the NCAA level. And you just kind of have heard about a little bit more of a decline in the NCAA product because the NCAA has lost star power to teams like the Ignite. Guys deciding to go overseas, guys wanting to do New Balance internships and things like that. And when you lose out on these stars continuing to cycle through, it does diminish some of your star power a little bit because these are the guys that are supposed to come through and be the big name guys coming out of high school and on these draft boards to ultimately get picked up in the NBA. And so I think with the kind of declining narrative surrounding men's basketball, this will help the NCAA in a lot of ways, being able to get some of that star power back and having the NBA in some ways kind of show solidarity with the NCAA and wanting it to thrive and feeling like the only reason and basically explaining that the only reason that this G League Ignite team was created was because of a void that the NCAA just had not filled, you know what I mean, in any capacity. Some could say what you will about the NIL and what you think about the fact that the NCAA itself still isn't paying these players out and they're just allowed to get paid off of their own name, image, and likeness. But still, there was a complete void that had not been filled to any capacity that the NBA felt like they sort of had to step in and kind of make happen because they still have to consider who it is that's coming into their league as well. And in what way can you kind of channel that, being that guys ultimately want to get paid once they, if especially the ones that know they're not planning to go to college and play basketball in college for 4 years. So I think, it kind of builds up the NCAA again, which is a very niche part and a very important part to the American basketball landscape, as you sort of speak of. The NBA obviously is a vital part to the American basketball landscape, and I would consider, you know, the U.S. team, the Olympics, as a very vital part as well. And when you see a decline in one of those vital parts while simultaneously continuing to see the growth of the game internationally and how it's impacting the NBA in particular, yes, I do think that you want to figure out a way to continue to have this game grow at an international level, but continue to have the game grow and progress simultaneously here in America, which has been for quite some time the dominant country when it comes to this sport.
I mean, I think it's just where I was thinking about it last night, like, The NCAA Division I basketball has probably the highest collection of, like, the top athletes at that age group.
Yeah.
Like, 18 to 21-year-old basketball players.
For
like,
sure.
You see so many different looks of, like, freak athletes, dudes that are crazy long, fast, coming from all over the world,
yeah,
mind you. Mm-hmm. A lot of international, you know, talent notices that. And so I think that it's still a really important place for learning the game of basketball as it scales up to the NBA.
For sure.
Because you get, again, and also, like, these are some of the best coaches.
Best
basketball minds. Organizations that have this, yeah, like, pedigree and this tradition and and this infrastructure set up to be like, here, we could teach you, like, this brand of basketball, this style of basketball. I think that that's really important.
Yeah.
To still try to maintain styles, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, traditions of basketball, because it makes the tapestry more, like, complex and more interesting.
For sure. No, I agree with that. And quite frankly, you know, you got Adam Silver following up David Stern's legacy. One thing about David Stern was he made this sure that this country was elite at the game of basketball, all the while growing the game worldwide. Of course, you give whoever you want some of that credit, the Michael Jordans, the Dream Teams, so on and so forth. But, like, that's a part of his legacy, is that while he was NBA commissioner, this country, this league in this country that is the NBA, was dominant at the sport. And I think it's okay for Adam Silver to want some of that to be the case in his legacy as well, and take pride in that, take pride, you know, in this country being able to be the class of the sport of basketball. And quite frankly, while yes, I think it's a lot more good than bad that the international game is sort of inundating the NBA and is growing and becoming better and better worldwide, I do still believe that there is something too Silver wanting to make sure that America maintains as the class of the sport of basketball, even while growing it worldwide.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, and I hope that it does, because the last few Olympics that we've been going to, we haven't been playing so hot. You know what I'm saying? In FIBA World Cups. And so I'm trying to see
the big United States. We got Paris 2024 coming up.
Yeah. Are you still, you're still trying to roll out to that? Yeah.
Probably not. It probably won't happen.
Honestly, I don't know if I would want to.
Probably not.
Because
I'm just going to be booked.
That's going to be such a high profile event, man.
I would want to.
I can't.
From an experience standpoint, I would absolutely want to.
Sure.
It's about, do I want to spend money or make money that week? And I'm the kind of guy that far, far, far more often than not, I'm picking the side of making money over spending money. Got to sacrifice some things, and that might be one of the experiences that I may have to sacrifice. But considering that the next Olympic Games will be in L.A. in 2028, I think that's a lot more feasible of an Olympics trip to make happen. Of course, I would love to see another part of the world, go to Paris and experience it all. But I do plan on being there in L.A. in 2028 by hook or crook. And so that's probably why I won't be going this year. But obviously, we've talked about the NCAA. We talk about March Madness, which is currently what we're in right now. And first off, I want to give both on the men's and women's side these NCAA bracket committees a lot of credit, because on the men's side, 8 of the Sweet 16 teams are the 4 of the 1 and 2 seeds in every region. And on the women's side, 12 of the 16 teams are the 1, 2, and 3 seeds from each region to have made it. And I think this is a massive deal for the NCAA. I know on the women's side of things, it's a massive deal because a lot of the characters that you still wanted to be a part of what's ultimately become the story, going to become the story of this women's tournament, they're all still around. You know what I'm saying? The best teams, the biggest stars, the biggest names are all still here and rocking on the women's side. And again, for the men's side, it's just good, accurate picking. You have less upsets. That means that, you know, the teams that belong here and the teams that have been giving you the best product from a basketball standpoint all season long are the ones that are still alive and kicking. So I think that's great for both. But if you've been listening to this podcast here, y'all know that we've been deep diving into this women's tournament. And I think it is in a phenomenal place right now. I'm very excited. Not just for all of the Sweet 16 rounds. I'm excited for the city of Portland because we will be hosting two of the sides of the regions. It's, you know, Albany has one and two regions, and Portland will have the three and four regions. So I'm excited to be able to have both regions playing here in the city of Portland. And I want to give a shout out to the Pac-12 because the Pac-12 has five teams that made it to the Sweet 16. And I'm going to tell you, anybody that has a Pac-12 opponent coming up in this Sweet 16 round, you better watch out because you very well could have five Pac-12 teams in the Elite Eight rounds because Iowa, starting with you, you might have a problem on your hands having to face off against Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, that's something you've been saying for long before the tournament started.
Yeah. Pac-12 has been the best conference top to bottom this season. They're obviously battle tested because they've gone through the rigors of having to play and compete in the best conference in all of the country because they've had to play against each other all season long in the conference season and in a conference tournament. And you might even have the best player that came out of the conference this year in the country. For those that would like to argue, Juju Watkins is the best player in the country, which is not an absurd thing to say. Although, yes, Caitlin Clark is still here. Although, yes, Paige Beckers and players like that is still here. And even if you want to look in the Pac-12, Juju didn't even win MVP of the conference. Cameron Brink did. So the star power and just, you know, obviously the success that they're having already in this tournament and starting with Iowa having to face off against a Colorado team that has size. They've got Noah Vonleh. Shout out to Rip City. His little sister. Yeah. She's a force, an all-conference player, you know, in the post. And then you got defensively, Colorado is just serious. They're a problem. And they beat LSU at the top of this season, earlier on in this season. So they've played in some big games, and I think they are ready to kind of shake some shit up against Iowa in this Sweet 16 round.
Now, there hasn't really been any upsets on the women's end to speak of at all.
No.
And so, you know, you got to think at least one is going to happen each round of 64.
Yeah,
it's
for
just
sure.
Where's the shoe gonna drop? I mean, it just feels like a foregone conclusion that it's Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese gonna get one more go at it. You know what I mean?
In the Elite
and
Eight
I'll
round.
Be watching that game closely to see because you know there's been some, you know, as all tournaments go, but there's been chatter about like reffing here and there, and then like I think a lot of it's come from the narrative of, you know, these personalities that are winning the eyes and the viewership of the people.
Yeah.
Is also resulting in people, you know, lobbing some criticism, particularly at Caitlin Clark, just about the way that she's been acting, some of the interactions with her dad. And it's a lot of that stuff is aimed at refs.
Yeah.
So
and the foul discrepancy.
Yeah, exactly.
In that last game.
So like
they had,
those two things are inextricably bound where people are going to start drawing conclusions if anything gets, you know what I mean? So that game I'll be watching, but it just feels like, I mean, it doesn't even matter whether they do or you don't. Like you said, there's so many stars.
So many stars.
In the women's side of things where it's like they just have the personalities and the
It's a great thing
drama going on that men's side just doesn't have.
And strategically, if I'm the coaching staff of Colorado, I'm using that to my favor.
Yeah, you want to get Caitlin Clark emotionally tipped.
I'm working, and I'm working the officials prior to the ball even tipping off at center court.
Absolutely.
I am in the officials' ear before the game starts because the court of public opinion has already said their piece in regards to the foul discrepancy as of last game. Obviously, you've kind of mentioned some of the frustrations that we've seen from Caitlin Clark, although she has still been absolutely dominant amongst those. Let's acknowledge that as well. And Colorado has a young lady by the name of Jalen Sherrod, who is a lockdown backcourt defender. She was an all Pac-12 defensive player, not defensive player of the year, but she was an all defensive team in the Pac-12 this year. And she might be the toughest matchup that Caitlin Clark is going to have to face throughout this tournament in that backcourt. And so if I'm Colorado, I'm working all of that. And again, this is a team that's battle tested and they've beaten LSU, who, by the way, I still got Iowa winning. Don't get me wrong, but LSU's got to face off against UCLA. Another tough game. They're the lower seeded team in that game. And I've had those two teams going to the Elite Eight in Iowa and LSU. And I think LSU would get them under those circumstances. But this Colorado team has already beaten LSU before. And that UCLA team is tough. And so on that side of the bracket, while we're looking for the story of Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese again, they got to get over a hump in that Sweet 16 round.
Right. And that's only what's happening on the side that we're not going to be right on top of.
Yeah. I mean, well, you got the other side of the Albany region as well, which, I mean, for what it's worth, you got South Carolina playing against Indiana in the Sweet 16 round over there. I got South Carolina all the way in that one.
It just is what it is.
You know what I'm saying?
South Carolina has been just eviscerating teams.
They have been eviscerating
teams.
They have
what it takes. That looks like the championship team to me.
Yeah,
sure. And all this talk about freshmen, Malaysia Fulwiley, probably my favorite freshman out the bunch, you know, that's not named Juju.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Because she's really gifted,
the real
too.
Deal. She's the real deal. And I got them clearing Indiana, no problem.
Clearing them.
What I do believe is probably the dark horse for the most, like, underrated game in the Sweet 16 round that is also on that side of the Albany bracket. No, Oregon State versus Notre Dame.
Notre Dame, yeah.
That's that game. I think you got that. That might end up being the best game we get in the round of 16. And, I mean, Oregon State, they're tough, they're gritty, they are very well coached. We obviously know, you know, the legacy that Scott Ruick has had there at Oregon State prior to that when he was in the NWC coaching at George Fox University. But you still got to deal with the doggone on the other side for Notre Dame. And I think that game is one that I'm really excited to see and keeping my eyes on because I think that's going to be a tough one.
Yeah.
But again, Hidalgo, the biggest star in that game, you got to watch out against this Oregon State team. They're battle-tested. A Pac-12 team, they're tough, they're well-coached.
They're spunky.
They're spunky, and they are here for a reason. They were a 3-seed for a reason, and you got to deal with them in the Sweet 16 round for a reason. The Pac-12 is a problem.
Yeah, Pac-12 is a problem. I mean, in that game, you also, what's her name, Sonia Citron?
Yeah.
She's nice with it, too. So she can get off. No, I got Notre Dame coming out of that game. But I have loved this Oregon State thing.
Some of the other day
they were asking me, they're like, Oregon State's good?
They're good.
I'm like, this program has been good for
a few
years.
It's been good for a while.
Yeah.
This is a program that's good. Well, now let's bring it over here to Portland. You know, you got Regional 3. The Sweet 16 rounds are USC versus Baylor. I got Juju and USC getting to the Elite Eight. And then down lower on that bracket, you got UConn and Duke. I got UConn clearing Duke in that one. I got USC, and I've said this before on the podcast in weeks prior.
I got Duke losing on both sides, men and women, this weekend.
Nice. Okay. I got UConn beating Duke in the Sweet 16 round. I got them facing off against USC here on Monday night, you know, at the Motor Center. And I just think the experience of UConn is going to push them into the Final Four. I don't think they're going to win a championship this year, but I think under these circumstances, having to play against a young, very, very good, one-seeded, and arguably having the best player in the country, USC team, I just think the experience of Paige Bueckers, and you know what I'm saying? I think the experience of Gino Auriemma, I just think they got it over there. You know what I'm saying? I think UConn is going to figure out a way to win that game and get to the Final Four. But I would rather see Juju get there. Let me be clear. I'm cheering for Juju to win, but I got a hunch that that all ends in the Elite Eight round if they got to play against UConn. Unless Duke beats UConn, then I got USC going all the way. But I got UConn beating Duke and then ultimately beating USC as well.
Paige Bueckers, Dawn Staley said it. She's like she thinks she's the most like well-rounded elite basketball player, you know, around. And I'm like, I can see it due to the experience, and she is really good. But I just think that the speed that USC plays with, particularly Juju when she's in the open floor, they can't guard that. UConn is going to be split in half in transition, and it's going to get ugly quickly. And they don't have enough around them to really get off and score. It's been slow to go.
Aaliyah Edwards is the player that I think is going to be the difference. It's going to be in that front court for UConn.
Yeah.
I think Aaliyah Edwards is that other player that can give you that game, that number two option game that you're going to need from her in order to beat USC for the reasons I think that you laid out. But I still think Aaliyah Edwards is a force underneath as well, along with Paige Bueckers, you know, being who Paige Bueckers is. And, of course, Gino, just knowing and having been in every single situation you can think of at this level, I think that's enough to deal with the athleticism of USC.
I can't wait to see that game.
I can't either. But they got to get it done in the Sweet 16 rounds. And then, of course, you know, in the Regional Four here in Portland as well, you got Texas against Gonzaga. I said last week that I think Texas has a really good chance at getting to the national championship game. I thought that they had the best and maybe potentially the easiest path to get there. I think they're going to clear Gonzaga no problem in the Sweet 16 round. And then from there, they would have to play against the winner of NC State and Stanford, which is going to be a really good game. That is the Pac-12 game that I do believe is not going to go in the favor of the Pac-12. I've been high on NC State this year, and I think they're going to get Stanford and try to make things tough on Texas to ultimately get to the Final Four. But I still got Texas beating Gonzaga and the winner of NC State versus Stanford. So I'm excited, man. Big weekend ahead. How's your men's bracket doing? Did you do one?
No.
Okay. I definitely did. It's shattered already. It's completely shattered. But my national championship team is still in it and rocking. I actually picked Tennessee to win it all. I might have a little bit of bias, but Tennessee is a very good team. I think they're a very complete team, first and foremost, but I'm big on Dalton Connect. I think he's the best player in the country. And I do. That's not to say that there aren't younger guys like with more potential in the league and further on, because Dalton Connect's obviously older. He's a fifth-year player. But I think right now, today, he is the most complete basketball player in college basketball, you know, with the size, the experience, the skill, all of the things.
The beard.
And, you know what I mean? And I actually – and I got to call a game. I've called a couple games, but particularly last season when he was playing at University of Northern Colorado, he was in the Big Sky before transferring to Tennessee, going into the SEC, becoming the SEC Player of the Year. He was killing in the Big Sky for Northern Colorado last year, and I caught his game on ESPN Plus against Portland State here at the Viking Pavilion, and he had 30. So I'm a little bit more familiar with his game, too, because I've gotten to witness it prior to the country being put on notice because of how great he's been at Tennessee and becoming ultimately the SEC Player of the Year. But the dude's got it, and I think that they're just going to sneakily keep figuring out a way to win games round by round. Yeah, you got UConn. Yeah, you got Houston. You know, you still got some of the bigger-name teams that are in it, but I think round by round they've got what it takes to just be able to really be in the moment, win one game at a time, and then next thing you know, you'll look up and they're in the national championship game or in the Final Four.
Yeah, I think you're biased, but
I might be.
You know, I would like to. I like Cinderella stories. I mean,
they're a three seed. That's not that much of a Cinderella. You're a top 10 team. You're in the ballpark of a top 10 team.
I guess they're like,
if you're the number three
seed. I think there's something like sixth or seventh favorite, like highest favorite.
Yeah,
so I guess that's not for sure.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider them Cinderella.
That is coming from the bottom of the pack, though, or from the back of the pack a little bit, though.
Well, but you're also coming from the SEC as well. So I think, you know, the same way that I mentioned, you know, the battle-tested teams in the Pac-12 on the women's side, I think the SEC is one of those conferences that will test you throughout the course of a season. Sure. And so I think they've got a little bit of that SEC edge to them as well, to where, again, and they do have a guy who is starting to become projected to be a lottery pick in next year's draft and has put the world on notice in Dalton Knecht. He's a star in the NCAA. We talk about the star power at that level. He's one of the top five stars at that level. So, you know, I think Tennessee, they can make it happen. Who you got, though, to win it?
I got UConn to win it, but I would love to see Houston go crazy because I just like the way they play.
For sure.
And I love that program. So, I mean, you have another connect, you know, your connection's all over the place, but, you know, shout out Tajay Moore because that's the way he plays, you know. I just like to see that type of stuff. I was talking earlier, you know, just about like different styles.
Yeah.
You know, styles make fights.
For sure.
And so that's what I like to see in the tournament. The drama of the single elimination is you don't get that anywhere else. I mean, like, crazy. It's just a high octane level of competition that just gives you so much as a player if you're trying to make the leap to the next level professionally, whether you're in the United States or, you know, overseas playing.
Yeah.
NCAA basketball is great basketball because you get so many different types of players at so many different stages.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean?
For sure. Of
whether it's athleticism or skill. And it's just this big sort of rotating puzzle piece of people trying to figure out, like, okay, where do I fit? Fit is something that matters.
It's huge.
I love it, man. Love it.
It's huge. Fit matters.
Fit matters a lot.
At the college level.
Yeah, man.
It matters. I always say, especially since I've gotten to start calling these G League games and I attend a lot of NBA games, it's like the NBA is far more situational. You know what I mean? It's a bunch of situationships in the NBA. It's guys that are professional basketball players that are just trying to find the right situation for them and whatever it is that they're elite at, where the NCAA is far more systemic, where you are trying to find guys that can fit in a particular system. They don't have to particularly be elite. Of course, you want to try to find one, maybe two dudes that can score it at an elite level so you can have some offense that you can rely on. But other than that, you're trying to find guys that fit the system and whatever it is the assignments are within that system. And the talent, although you still got to be talented to even play college basketball as well to some extent, but it does not matter nearly as much as once you get to the professional level.
Right.
And really being able to fit in the system matters a lot.
Totally.
At the college level. And again, I don't think it's nothing wrong with that.
No, and I think that's what makes the NCAA vital still.
You know? For sure.
I mean, like I say, we'd love to see them be a little bit more, you know, generous.
Well, yeah. I mean, it makes you think. When you tag on, like you said, having to really kind of be able to find and be able to work within systems, that causes you to have to think. And they are still two student athletes
to some extent.
That's, so they're going there to get like, an
just
education
dude
is as well.
6'7" doesn't mean he's an 18-year-old kid, bro.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
And there's more that's developing here than just like his, you know,
basketball
economic
acumen,
viability for your multi-million-dollar team.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And that means going beyond even just like the art of the game or like to trying to be this to develop the skill of the game in right quote unquote right ways. Like he's still developing people too.
Yeah,
and so
definitely.
That's what the NCAA needs. I just needs to get a little bit better at.
Definitely, I agree. And treating them fairly would help. And again, that's a step that they're trying to take in that direction with NIL.
I know, but money talks and bullshit walks. And you're still bringing bullshit, then it's like it's gonna be. You know what I mean? It's gonna be like flimsy on the bottom.
For sure. I agree wholeheartedly. Let's transition into some hip hop. Let's take it to the culture. Let's take it to this Like That record. Metro Boomin, Future, they dropped a project together called We Don't Trust You. We don't trust you if Young Metro don't trust you.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that's great. I love the cover art too, bro.
Yeah,
cover art is pretty dope.
For sure, for sure. Well, they just dropped this project that I'm gonna go out here and say right away before we get into, you know, some of the bigger news regarding that project. Right away, I'm calling this project an instant classic. I think you have a top five
hype train
artist. I'm calling it an instant classic right away. And I'm calling that just off listening to the music. Like, Metro Boomin, best producer in hip hop right now today. And he had a phenomenal year last year. He was nominated for the Grammy for his project. He took over and became the star at Coachella. And this year, he is coming right out the gates and making an absolute statement with this project, because I thought his production was absolutely top tier. From the samples that he used, the way that he flipped the samples, also just the way that you could tell he still put his own twist into the beats as well, especially I think when you start to listen to like more of the drums and things like that in particular, which comes from that trap sound, you know what I mean? Which him and Future have been vital to. And then obviously you got Future. I think nobody floats on a record in the world better than Future, just from start to finish. And they had great features. They had about four or five songs that on first listen, you like, oh, this could be the hit single. Of course, the people's choice for what the hit single is, though, ultimately, is this record Like That. And Kendrick Lamar had a verse where he was dissing J. Cole and Drake. The song, first and foremost, was great for all of the reasons that I sort of just laid out. And because of the dissing of J. Cole and Drake in the record, and Kendrick just smoked the verse, in my opinion, it's easy to know, okay, this is the first single that you sort of got to push out there from this project because of the quality of it, but also because of the controversy that sparked from it.
Yeah, I mean, it's dope that Future obviously heard that verse probably from Kendrick and was like, oh shit, like, we're gonna mess the game up with this.
Oh, they did.
And they did.
Oh man, they did.
And they did. And you know, it's like, of course it comes from Future, bro. Because I think a lot of people forget that he's one of the greatest MCs in the last 25 years.
Yeah.
This guy, we were talking about Mount Rushmore, modern Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
If there's a modern Mount Rushmore of rap, Future's on it.
Yeah,
I don't care.
Along with those big three that Kendrick was dissing and saying it's just a big me, but we know the big three that was acknowledged on First Person Shooter by J. Cole, which is J. Cole, Drake, and Kendrick. I do think that a Mount Rushmore conversation has to be discussed, especially after this chess move, and Future's got to be that guy.
No, exactly like you say, chess move, too. And
it was a chess move.
It was a chess move.
Yes.
By Future, because he's, you know, a lot of people these days have, revisionist history when they look back on.
Say more.
When they look back on some of the things that, let's say, this big three has done.
Yeah.
Drake is probably the best rapper in the game. I mean, on a lot of metrics.
Yeah.
You can argue ad nauseum, but it's probably Drake. Let's just be honest.
Yeah.
But people will say, oh, other guys like Future, the reason why they were there at, because of guys like Drake. And it's like, if you're Future, you're sitting there going, no, that's not the way it happened.
Right.
Like, I've been the man.
Yeah, for sure.
I've been the man.
It's a fact.
I've been Future from the Dungeon Family for a long time. I've been one of I was the best rapper for like a 7-year period, like, for sure. Like, a Wayne-like run.
Yeah, yeah. He had a crazy run.
Then Drake and Future link up. And people think, okay, well, now Future is on that Mount Rushmore because he got to rap with Drake. But that helped Drake's career.
Absolutely.
And so that's why you go, well, you know what? I hear all this bullshit. I'm just going to go get Kendrick.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to throw him on the track and let him spaz out.
Yeah.
Empty the clip. And then we'll, and then he, what does he do? That was just a feature on my album.
Yeah.
You know,
on my album.
Sitting there just super,
chess move.
Super duper.
And it was a hit.
It was a hit.
It was a hit. Listen, the initial feeling, obviously I've gotten to sit with First Person Shooter longer because it's been out for a while and it's had great success, that record. But It ain't been out long enough for me not to remember the initial feeling, which was a good one, by the way, when I first heard First Person Shooter in comparison to the initial feeling that I got from hearing Like That. And Like That just gave me a little bit more feels. Again, credit Metro Boomin as well. Like, you credit Future for the reasons you just said. We know Kendrick is an assassin, an absolute assassin, but Metro Boomin with that beat, the breakdown of the beat at the end of the record, the samples that he chose to use in that record, like, it was magical. and it gives you a feel that you can already relate to because of the samples, and he flipped it well, perfectly, precisely, if you will. And so I think this Like That record is going to definitely be the song of the summer. And I think he's got other songs, the Type Shit song with, you know, Cardi and Travis Scott. Like, he's got a lot of other songs. The Fried Shea Vibe song that I think will be hits and work their way up the charts as well this summer. But Like That just gave me a little bit more of a feeling, you know, that lean me more to that song just being a better song than First Person Shooter, although I think First Person Shooter is great.
Yeah, and I just think it's because Future... Well, first off, I'll tell you like this. My Mount Rushmore does not include J. Cole, but, you know, that's just my own personal taste. I like Future for my money, especially in like a back and forth style rap situation.
Yeah.
That's what really should happen. Yeah. Future and Kendrick should just do something like that.
They need to do a project.
That would be, I mean, fuck, that would be so cool.
And like sonically.
Let them know.
I would, yeah, sonically. Yeah, we could talk about rapping and MCing. We know, you know, I think J. Cole's been the most consistent. Drake has probably been the most versatile, but Future is very versatile as well. But I think just the depths, the sonic depths, along with the quality bars that you would get from a Future and Kendrick project, it just surpasses what you would get from a Drake and a J. Cole project. We don't already talk about Drake projects in the highest regard. We know that he's been able to drop single after single after single, eat a Pringle time and again, but like, we don't really talk about Drake's projects in the same breath that we talk about Kendrick's projects. Yeah. Or even that we start, you know, you start thinking about DS2 and you start thinking about projects like Hendrix that Future has been able to crank out and produce. I just think the depths that Future and Kendrick can go together are just far more deeper than the ones that Cole and Kendrick could together.
Well, that's why I think that Kendrick, Future, Drake all are like squarely on that Mount Rushmore of rap for themselves, and J. Cole isn't necessarily. Mm. Because I don't think that his music and his catalog from a holistic standpoint, like from end to end, stands up sonically to those guys' discographies.
I would agree.
Now, I don't think, and it's funny because you asked me about this and you were like, do you think it's because of your musical bias that you might think that? And I was like, yeah, I might. But then I think about the fact that J. Cole probably, like, hand to hand,
is probably the best musician
out of all of them.
Yeah.
Because his production game, the stuff that he makes, I mean, he can really do it.
Yeah.
Like,
he's a
real craftsman. And so, and I'm sure all those guys can play, you know, beat machines and MIDI keyboards and shit too.
Yeah,
J. Cole's a real artist.
Yeah.
But it's like, yo, that's cool that you did all of that shit by yourself, man. Like, that's really cool.
Yeah.
But that dude's got Thundercat on bass.
Yeah.
And that dude's got Terrace Martin over there, dude.
Yeah.
Like, Future and Metro Boomin are cooking some shit up right now for him.
Hey.
Like, if, yeah, you know?
Drake's got 40 engineered. Yeah. Like, you know
what
I mean?
Come on, man. Yeah, it's all just OVO, like, and beyond. He can touch anyone he wants in the world. And
sure.
Will.
And Will. Yeah, yeah, it's Animal. Willing to do it.
If he has
he's
to go
willing
there.
To go genre to genre. He's willing to go artist to artist, like, with no problem. And while I do think bar for bar, maybe Cole has been the most consistent, I do tend to agree with you. Musically, he is a level below all three of those guys in terms of what he produces. Not his own musicianship or musicality, but what he produces and puts
for
on display
himself,
for the world to hear.
That says J. Cole on it. That's a J. Cole song.
For sure, you for sure. I mean? And again, talking about Future and Metro Boomin, I think we got to start having a conversation about those guys being like a modern day Dr. Dre and Snoop.
Or Dr. Dre and Eminem.
I mean.
Or Dr. Dre and.
Whoever. But you know what I mean? Dr. Dre is still Dr. Dre. But it's like, as of right now, today, like, they are, you know, they've been over a decade cooking now. You know what I'm saying? Like, once you break that decade mark of being hot and not really having any fall offs, if you will, like that, like, yeah, they are.
That's a super duo, man.
They're a super duo.
A Titanic,
no doubt about it.
Scaled super duo.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. So, again, I think it's an instant classic, man. I think you got the most impactful hip-hop verse that we've heard in a long time, and it will be the most probably impactful hip-hop verse that we'll get this entire year. I think the timing of when he released the project is perfect. You know, he drops it here in the spring. We know Future, it takes over the summer whenever he chooses to. I think he had great features on the project. He had the best producer you could possibly have in the game, and he barred up as well. Like, if you really sit and listen to that project, it ain't Future just mumbling and being melodic. Like, Future is talking his shit on there as well, just all the way around. I think it was a very well-crafted project, and so congratulations to him.
Do these guys need to retaliate even?
Spar. Go ahead and spar, big fellas. Like, y'all are the biggest names in the game. Like, it's great for hip-hop. I think, you know, hip-hop has always been competitive, first and foremost. I mean, I look at it from my own standpoint as a DJ. Like, I don't have no personal issues with not a single DJ in the city of Portland. I'm cool with all of them. I want them to thrive and be successful. I love what it does for this scene. But if the opportunity ever presents itself for us to stand side by side and mix together, and a few cats already out here already know, let's spar. Because for one, it motivates me. I'm competitive. I'm competitive first and foremost, and that comes from, you know, my ties to music, but of course my ties to athletics as well. But at the same time, I'm okay with sparring and this making for a great night and a great moment for music or for hip hop, even if I'm on the losing end of it. Like, I'm humble enough to be like, you got me tonight, but you're going to have to get me, though. You know what I'm saying? I'm not just going to let you have me because I'm just too humble. Like, I'm still going to come here and try to show up and show out as well. And so, you know, I think for hip-hop, it's great. It makes for more competitive music. It makes for a better product. It makes for greater moments within the hip-hop landscape. Spar. Clap back at each other. And I don't really see any violence coming from this as well. That's the thing.
They're all too filthy rich.
You know what I mean? They're all too filthy rich. So I don't think this is a matter of, like, this thing ultimately turning violent. I think this is just a matter of spar, because that's what the sport of hip-hop is all about. So I hope that a response is coming. And I'm glad that Kendrick came about it the way that he did and let it be known. I'm not sneak dissing. I'm calling out your songs.
He wants smoke this summer for some reason.
He wants smoke. You know what I'm saying? Like, I love that. He's independent now.
He's been doing
that. Could be a reason.
Yeah. And he's been doing all those burpees on that towel in the park. He's just sitting there getting righteous.
And I do believe the best bar was the clicking up bar. I mean,
that's pulling at your heartstrings. That
absolutely,
right,
man. It was like a quadruple entendre talking about these dudes clicking up and how that can't be legit. Like, that's not a legit move, but that can't be legit. No 40 water. Be legit in 40 water. Coming from the old school Vallejo rap crew called The Click, a classic group in hip hop. And again, me being a Vallejo kid, understanding the double entendre right away, because a lot of people thought that that was a diss towards 40, Drake's engineer, when he mentioned can't be legit, no 40 water. But a lot of those people didn't understand the double entendre when it came to Be Legit, because Be Legit is actually a rapper that's a part of this famous, you know, classic known hip-hop group.
Is
and
be
40
legit
water
that
is his cousin.
Forgotten?
Clearly. That's 90s hip-hop, though. The Click is 90s hip hop. We're just from where we from. That Be Legit is a legend in our eyes. But I could see where a lot of people that are just, you know, in tune with this situation,
would not know
yeah. who Be Legit is. You know what I'm saying? And of course, the double entendre of them clicking up. That can't be a legit move. And, you know, the real click is Be Legit and E-40 and, you know, the family group that they had that came right out of the hillside of Vallejo. And so that was the click that I was notoriously raised on. You know what I mean? Like the click's music, I'm born and bred to that music. So, yeah, man, I just thought that bar was crazy because it was like a quadruple entendre there. And many people did not catch it initially. I caught it right away, and on first listen, that bar had me sold that this is a high-level verse right here.
Kenny, man, he takes his time. He really crafts up his rhymes.
Yes, he does.
And so does J. Cole, though. I'm actually more excited to hear what J. Cole has to put together because—
For sure.
He does the same thing. Like, they're going to do, like, well, I mean, they're basically slam poetry battling each other right now. You love to see it.
Real quick, we're going to get into a take and L's. And this week, my take and L's are not so critical. My take and L's is going to be to the city of Baltimore, who lost a lot of lives. We still don't know the amount of lives lost due to a ship running into a bridge and collapsing the bridge.
Yeah,
Francis Scott Key Bridge. And so, you know, prayers to the community for, you know, the loss of community members, obviously the family members of those people that could have potentially been on that bridge that we're still trying to find underwater right now. That was just a horrible loss. And then, of course, you lose a staple like a bridge. As somebody that grew up in the Bay Area myself and now lives in Portland, like, I understand the significance and the importance of bridges because I've grew up around and driving across bridges my entire life in both the markets that I've lived in. And so, you know, just prayers all around, but most importantly for the lives lost, got to give Baltimore that take and nail, but not to be critical, but to extend our condolences and well wishes from up here in the Pacific Northwest. You got a nail?
Yeah, man, it's Puff.
Yeah, it's got to be.
It's got to be, man. I mean, if for anything else, it's like, man, this shit has just been all over my timeline. Can't escape it. I'm like, man, good. Bring him in for questioning or something. You know? Jesus.
He's gone.
Let's do something.
He's out of here, champ. Bring him in for questioning. From where? Where are you going to bring him in from? He's out of here. But it is a horrible situation. You do got to give him an L because, you know, we're just seeing one of the greatest empires in music, especially black music, kind of crumble in
because
real time
the,
right now.
I mean, if it's, you know, if any of this shit, you know, it's like, dude, what the fuck, man?
It's some creepy allegations out there for sure. But on that note, we're going to leave y'all the only way that we know how, and that is to stay woke and go in.